Can you hear me at all?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Oh, good. Thank God.
What happened?
I was unaware of how unprepared I was for this at this moment in time.
Oh,
No, 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 no. I thought I was like, oh yeah, I'll just like turn on my microphone and hop on, unrealizing that I redid some stuff because I got speakers for my desktop. So
Oh,
wanted,
fancy.
yeah. And I wanted to like have everything plugged in, but like I can't have everything plugged in all at once because the computer doesn't like that.
So it's temperamental. Also,
And
I can hear you, but I can't see you.
I understand because my fucking
I understand. I understand.
my webcam is not plugged in yet. Please hold. But I just wanted to make sure at least the
Oh,
audio
yeah,
worked.
I can hear you 110% now.
I hate this. All
I'm
right.
so sorry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm Blair, and I'm holding a cat.
And I'm Kirsten. I am sadly not holding a cat, but we are mediocre
Mediocre
content. I can
content.
say 1,000%, though, that Lynx was an absolute menace in the office today.
Oh my
He
God, what did he do?
enjoys trying to jump on top of my work computer, which presses a bunch of buttons. And what he doesn't understand is it can just lock me out
Oh, good.
because it's like a government computer.
Yeah.
So they could be like, oh, no, that's suspicious. And then I would not have access to my work laptop.
That's good.
He got a
That's good.
talking to. Oh my God. So, you guys can't see Salem, but he's doing that backwards stretch thing where he's got to look at you
Yes.
upside down. Very fun.
He wanted to see the people I'm talking to, aka
It's
just
true.
Kirsten.
It's j literally just me and all of the stuffed animals behind me. What? You got off our work early today, which
I
is so
did.
fun.
I know. It happens once in a blue moon, and it's like a significant amount of time where I don't have to like, well, it was a significant enough time where we had enough time to do something productive together,
Yes.
which was nice.
Yeah, that's true too.
Yeah.
Also, it's always nice when you get off work early on a Monday. Something about Monday is just it just tastes better when you
I just,
just
it's so good. I was like, I almost went and got myself a little treat. I was like, no, but it's like too early
Blair.
in the week for all that.
No. Next time, just treat yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all right. I'm going to Disneyland at the end of the week. That'll be enough.
Which is so fun.
I'm like so excited. I could not be more excited. Not to brag. I don't really want to, but like I am so excited, and I think it's because we haven't really like done anything fun since we went to Canada for New Year's,
Which was still very fun,
which was
for sure.
super, super, super fun. Yes,
Yeah.
but I feel like I'm like going stir crazy where I like need to
It's time.
do something else. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. I will be writing a paper this weekend.
Congrats.
Thank you.
Tell Tyler we hope he scores well on his paper.
Right. Exactly. I have a lot in this episode, if you
Okay.
want to go ahead and disclaim, it was a lot
Yes.
more than I thought it would be, so I apologize in advance.
Okay, I'll talk fast. All
No,
right.
you're fine.
Welcome to our podcast. We don't know what we're talking about 95% of the time, and we just want to inform you guys about things that are kind of fun, and we try to aspire to like Hank Green level, science, but sometimes
Real.
that doesn't always happen. We
True
have lives, we have
inspiration.
things going on. So we are called mediocre content for that reason, and we want you guys to like interact with us. Let us know if we got something wrong. If you know more about our subject than we do, please hit us up in our DMs or comments or whatever, and we will, correct ourselves for sure. And who knows, maybe even have you on the pod. We'll see.
Hey. Yeah, right.
You never know.
Exactly. Yeah.
The world may never know. But yeah, so we're here to have fun. Do your own research as well. If something sounds weird that we say and you don't think it's true, definitely research it on your own because there's
Please.
a good chance it might not be true.
We definitely use our sources to the best of our ability.
We do.
However,
We
not
do.
all sources are reliable.
Precisely. So we do our best over here and our two-woman research department. So
And our tech team, also
and
two women.
our two-woman tech team.
And our writers, us. And
Us.
our publishers, us.
Right. Right. So as you can tell, we have a small operation happening here, and we don't get paid to do this. So here we are.
So
And I'll
fun.
just go right into the good news then, because I forgot that I did this, but I did do this.
You did.
Okay. All right. So the first one is a really cute little story. School bus driver Larry Ferris Jr. is known in his community for going above and beyond. Now he's touching the hearts of strangers after an act of kindness went viral. Larry, who drives a bus in Louisville, Kentucky, recently noticed that a boy named Levi was having a rough morning. Quote, "Normally, when I pull up, he's standing there waiting for me with a big smile, but on this day, he was sitting on the ground with a jacket over his head.
Aww.
I asked him, 'Hey, buddy, what's going on? What's wrong?' That's when Levi, a first grader at Eagleheart Elementary School, explained through tears that he did not have pajamas for pajama day, which is, if you've ever been, that age and not had pajamas for pajama day, it's traumatizing. So, he basically was having a bad day. So Larry says, knowing that Levi wanted to participate but couldn't, it filled him with sadness. And he said, quote, "I gotta fix this." So after Larry finished up his morning routes, he headed to the Family Dollar and purchased two pairs of pajamas for
Oh my
Levi. And then
God.
he headed over to Levi's school to give them to him. Quote, "I said, 'You were hurting this morning, you were crying, so I got these pajamas,'" Larry recalls. Quote, "He was so excited. You should have seen how his face lit up."
That's so cute.
Larry adds that Levi hugged the pajamas to his chest, and Mr. Larry, as the kids call him, turned Levi's whole day around.
That is precious.
So, yeah. Larry, who previously worked as a correctional officer and a truck driver, says he found his calling.
Oh,
So
that
he loves
is
being a bus driver for these kids.
perfect.
And he says, quote, "I've been driving buses for 7 years. It's my passion because I get to build bonds with the kids. I truly love every minute of it." After Jefferson County Public Schools posted on its Facebook what Larry did for Levi, people started sharing their own stories. Quote, "Mr. Larry is the absolute best. We're blessed with him as our bus driver for 4 years. Top-notch human," one person wrote. Another added, "Larry is the absolute best, and the kiddos know that they're in great, caring, capable hands with him."
Oh my God,
That's so
Larry, the
nice.
real MVP.
Shout out to Larry. You
That's
probably won't ever hear
amazing.
this podcast, but if you do, we love you.
That's right. Oh, that's so cute.
Okay, so the second story I have for you guys today is Portly Dog,
I'm
is what I
sorry,
call them. Portly
what?
Dog. All right, so this one's another really cute one. So, despite the challenge and schedules of veterinary school, Kirsten knows because she almost went one time. A
That's true.
24-year-old woman in California is fostering a very overweight dog, to the tears and delight of thousands who follow the pair on Instagram.
My God.
As the months pass, the pounds have melted away, and as the weight comes off, a sparkling canine personality is emerging that has the young woman certain she's found a partner for life. Neglected, obese, and suffering from pneumonia and hyperthyroidism, Franny, the golden retriever, was
Franny.
on death's door
Oh
when
my God.
Annika Bram became aware of her plight. As it happened, Bram's golden retriever, Georgia, who
Oh.
had just died, was also extremely overweight when Bram adopted her. She helped Georgia lose 85 pounds and in their 5 years together.
Nice.
Learning from canine rescue organization Rover's Retreat that Franny was going to be euthanized, she felt that Georgia had brought this dog to her because she knew she was the person who could take care of her.
My heart.
Contacting Rover's Retreat, she offered to foster Franny, who she learned weighed 125 pounds.
Wow.
about double the normal heft of a female
The
golden
normal
retriever.
heft. The normal heft.
Sydney Mailman, which is wild.
Like
The
it.
president of Rover's Retreat, which is again, wild
Wild.
name for someone who's going to be a dog
Sydney
rescue.
Mailman.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
Told the Washington Post that Franny never had proper veterinary care when she was medically unstable. She believed that they had got to her just in time. As Franny recovered what was left of her strength, Mailman knew Bram was the right person to
Mail.
foster her.
That sounds so weird. Mailman.
It's not two separate words either. It's
It's
like
more.
Mailman.
Yeah, it's more like a male man.
Yeah, so like the
Why
gender of
are
male.
double
Anyway,
reinforcing?
Annika just kept following up, says Mailman. After talking to her, we
It
just
just
knew
makes me chuckle. I'm
it's
sorry.
Mailman. And it's like he's a leader of a dog organization. Like,
It's
it's the
not even
best.
the mailman because it's a name. So it's just
I
like,
know.
according to mailman.
Ralph.
I'm sorry. Oh,
We're
stop.
so
I'm so
sorry.
giggly.
I know. Okay. Sorry, Sydney. You just have a
Yes,
really unfortunate last name.
just what it is.
After talking to her, we knew that she was going to set Franny up for success. She was willing to do everything and anything for the dog she never met. Driving 3 hours down to San Diego, Bram finally met Franny, but the meeting was bittersweet as the student at UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine said that the pooch seemed completely defeated. Bram was determined, however, to help Franny get back to a normal weight, documenting her efforts on social media. Hundreds of thousands of people began to tune in to see the techniques Bram used to help her new dog get back on her paws, literally. At first, Franny was so heavy she couldn't support herself, so Bram had her sitting over a crate so she could safely learn to put weight back on her legs. With the help of these rehab activities, thyroid medication, and a strict diet, the pounds began to fall away and a hidden personality began to emerge. Quote, "She's a completely different dog," says Bram. "Every day her personality comes out more. All that personality has been hidden away for so long." At the end of February, Franny was able to run for the first time in who
Oh,
knows how long, chasing a bouncing tennis ball like a normal pooch should.
precious.
Bram has applied for adoption of Franny, whose daily walk is already exceeding a half mile as she continues to her
Nice.
rehab. At the time of publishing, she's got down to 91.2 pounds from a high of 125.
Beautiful
We love
success.
that,
Oh, you
Franny.
go, girl. Oh, my gosh. I love that.
Yes.
I also want to be mailman.
I do too. I do too.
What a perfect name.
I agree.
Well, that's lovely. I love everything about that. And I'm so glad that you brought beautiful stories for the good news, because this entire pod is the opposite of that, exactly.
Oh, good.
So today we're going to talk about the wonders of bogs and their ecological importance. And I would also like to preface this entire episode by saying that there is 100% definitely no possible chance that there is anything spooky in the second half at all. We will not be discussing anything creepy or unsettling relating to bogs at all in the second half, not here, of this pod.
Why do I feel like you're being facetious?
If you're looking for bog spooks, you came to the wrong place, is all I'm saying
Dear Lord.
for the second half. So now that we got that out of the way and we all know nothing's happening that is spooky in the second half of the pod, shall we begin?
We shall.
Okay. So, as usual, I think it's important to at least discuss what a bog is, and the fun part is they are everywhere. Whether you're in the States or in the UK, and maybe even in like Asia, you probably find some form of this. So, a bog is a freshwater wetland of soft, spongy ground, which consists mainly of partially decayed plant matter called peat. So, you might also hear it called a peat bog, because that's literally what it is. Bogs are generally found in cool northern climates. They often develop in poorly draining lake basins created by glaciers during the most recent ice age. And the world's largest wetland is a series of bogs, actually in the Siberia region of Russia. The Western Siberian lowlands cover more than 1 million square kilometers, and that's over 300,000 square miles of bog area. So that's fun.
So my question is, what is the difference between a swamp and a bog?
Actually, we'll kind of cover that. It's not really like a true comparison, but we'll talk about it very soon. So
Okay.
hold that question.
Sounds good.
There are also several distinct types of bog habitats. The first one is a blanket bog developed in highland areas with significant rainfall. The bog blankets an entire area, including hills and valleys, so it just encapsulates the entire region. There's also a cataract bog, and they are ecosystems that feature a permanent freshwater stream, which is very fun sounding and very leisurely sounding. There's also a quaking bog, and that develops over a lake or pond with bog mats, which is just thick layers of vegetation. Delicious.
Don't go over there to that quaking bog.
Don't do it! And it's usually that vegetation, the mat, is usually around 1 meter or 3 feet thick on top. She a thick one.
Big
And
boy.
the reason that they call it a quaking bog is because they bounce when people or animals walk on them. Because it's so,
Oh.
right, you can walk on it and it's so
Oh.
thick you just
So it's
bounce
like
off the thing.
jello?
Sure. I was gonna
Oh,
say more like a
God.
trampoline, but okay.
Jello.
A jello bog. Raised bogs are vaguely dome-shaped as decaying vegetation accumulates in the center. String bogs have a varied landscape with low-lying islands interrupting the saturated bog ecosystem. And then the last one is valley bogs, which just develop in shallow valleys. So it's not that the chemistry of a bog changes, it's more how it's developed and where it resides that determines the type of bog. All bogs take hundreds or thousands of years to develop, so it's not something that you'll wake up tomorrow and be like, I have a bog. It's not like that at all. It's formed when a lake slowly fills with plant debris, and there is a specific type of moss called sphagnum, as well as other plants, of course, but they grow out from the lake's edge, and this vegetation eventually just ends up covering the entire surface of the lake itself. They can also form when the sphagnum moss covers dry land and prevents precipitation from evaporating because it's really thick. Again, that quaking one is like 3 feet thick. So it's really hard for the water there to evaporate. And then these bogs are called, that particular one is called an ombrotrophic bog, which is a mouthful. Plants decay slowly in bogs because flooding prevents a healthy flow of oxygen from the atmosphere. Bog soils are oxygen and nutrient poor and are more acidic than other soils. Eventually, watery bogs become choked with living and decaying plants, and these slowly decaying plants become the main components of the bog's soggy soil called histosol. Histosol? Yeah, that's better.
Sure.
Fungi and low-lying shrubs such as heather grow in histosol. And heather can grow directly on sphagnum moss, and in fact, bogs are often called heaths after the abundance of the heather that blankets them. So that's great.
Wow.
Yeah.
This seems like a lot of layers, you know?
Literally, actually.
Yeah.
Onions have layers.
I know they do. Yeah,
Cakes
so
have
do
layers.
ogres. Ogres also have layers.
They sure do. Which is great. So fun. Love that. So the difference then, just to provide. So, to your question. So, swamps are, I believe, not at temperatures that will not support bacteria. Bogs, on the other hand, the layer that's underneath all of the moss and plant vegetation is one, acidic, two, nutrient and oxygen poor, and three, that means that there isn't really viable bacteria.
Okay.
So nothing, and This is definitely not a clue for the second half of the pod either.
Okay,
But
okay.
this is also why if you're in a, like if you're in a swamp, you probably would encounter a lot of bacteria and other things that at some point may or may not be able to digest you if you were no longer alive.
Oh, so that's why people kill each other and put them in swamps. I got it now. I know
Because
what
they'll
the second half
decompose.
is. I got it. I got it. I know what it is
Okay.
now.
Okay,
Okay,
great.
good. All
Because
right,
it was
lovely.
literally the inspiration for this because
The
we talked
second
about
half.
it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Okay, so that's all I'm gonna say.
That's exciting. We all
Okay.
know what's happening now.
So I'll shut my mouth and just keep going.
Florida man dies in swamp. Body is never found again.
How would they
How
know?
would they know?
They wouldn't. Not enough sphagnum moss. So then, the additional question, at least that this article tried to answer as well, is okay, well, what are peatlands? You've got bogs and peatlands, but then you also said, Kirsten, it's also called peat in the bog. So how do I know? Well, I'm gonna tell you. So thick, spongy layers of that histosol soil eventually form what is known as the peat. Peat is a fossil fuel, fun fact, that is the first stage in the process of plant material turning into coal. So if you didn't know that, that is the range of information.
Wow.
So
That's
fun.
interesting in so many
Right?
ways, considering the
Yes.
fact that like you know how like in dinosaur movies, a lot
Yes.
of the like the first one that comes to mind is Land Before Time. And
Of
I feel like
course.
there was a very large culture of like swamp type atmosphere in that movie. Maybe I'm misremembering, but like I feel like the
Tar
swamp
pits.
and tar pits are like adjacent to dinosaurs, which totally makes sense now because breaking down things and turning them into coal and oil and things like that happen
Yeah.
in swamps.
Isn't that
And
fun?
wow, I'm learning
I'm
so much.
so glad this has been so
I'm
educational.
learning this is eye-opening.
Oh, good. Fantastic. So, with that, then, ancient bog plants, which again is that sphagnum moss, are the fossils in peat. Because it's,
Okay.
de it's decomposing plants.
Right.
And that's, yes.
Right.
So, people will actually harvest the peat, and they've done this for thousands of years. And it's a source of energy, obviously, for heating, insulation, electricity. And at the time when these were really, from what I understand, a lot of this is based in Northern Europe. That's where a lot of them have been found and where a lot of people were harvesting this material at the time. And thousands of bogs throughout Ireland, Scotland, Scandinavia, and Russia have been drained to peat excavation. That's how aggressive it's because it's a fossil fuel. They're using it for all these things, and some
Right.
of the bogs have been completely wiped out, essentially, because of how much it's being, I would say, farmed, for lack of a better word.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's
Think
probably not good for us, though, right?
no, because it's
Yeah.
I mean, as in the beginning, it takes thousands of years for these to
Right.
form.
Right.
And it's a natural way to do it, but there's only so much to go around.
Right.
And if you're not giving it time to like fix itself and heal itself,
Right.
and you're just depleting, yeah.
It's similar to the
Common,
oil
I was gonna say,
situation.
common
Yeah.
situations with all current fossil fuels.
Humankind
Yeah.
eradicating all of the resources and then being like, why is our earth
They took
terrible?
all the
This is why.
bogs.
This is why.
So thick blocks of the peat are cut and then allowed to dry, and then the blocks are then burned because that's the source. And in some places like Ireland, peat is an industrial fuel, like we said, for electricity and heating. And then in Scotland or Scandinavia, for example, individuals or communities will harvest it as cooking fuel. So it's just kind of different ways that it could be used, I guess.
Sure.
There's also tropical peatlands, and they're usually found in Southeast Asia and are also a valuable source of timber, apparently, and also a popular site for to drain for development, so
Oh,
They're
great.
also not great.
Wait. Okay. All
Yes.
right. I have more questions because
Okay.
I'm
Hopefully, I
thinking
have
about
answers.
you may not, and I might just be annoying, but here
No.
we are. Okay. So, oh, I see it. You might be talking. Actually, I'm gonna let you go on for like 10 more
Okay.
minutes, and then I'm gonna see if my question is answered. All right.
Okay. Cool. But then the last thing around the peat stuff then is dried peat is also used in agriculture. So peat moss, which is probably a term you're familiar with, increases soil's ability to retain the water. So again, you know those ones we just talked about where it's kind of thick and it can't evaporate. This is a great use for that because it prevents the soil from beginning dry, and then you don't have to water it as much.
Wow.
Yeah. So now we're going to talk a little bit about the ecology of bogs, and they are, as you may have guessed, very ecologically important because they do absorb great amounts of precipitation. They prevent flooding, they can absorb runoff. They're just really good at being able to manage water very well. And so that sphagnum moss, they have reeds, something called sedges, which I'm not familiar with, and
Hedges,
heather.
but sedge.
Right, sedges, but hedges, hedges, sedges. And then heather are common as the plants in the bog, of course. So they receive all the water from precipitation instead of lakes, like glaciers, groundwater. So they're that ombrotrophic. And so on those ombrotrophic bogs have very few nutrients, so not able to survive with many plants or different plant types. Carnivorous plants have adapted actually in these environments by not absorbing nutrients from the surrounding water, but from the insect prey, of course.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so like those pitcher
The Venus
plants.
fly traps.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeek.
I know. These carnivorous plants, such as sundews and those pitcher plants, will trap them, of course, and then dissolve the nutrients. So they don't need the water. They can just eat a couple bugs. Bogs that are fed by lake basins and other water sources have, of course, much more biodiversity. Plants that would grow in a non-ombrotrophic environment as a bog would include cranberries, blueberries, and huckleberries.
That was my question because
Ah,
I'm like,
okay.
how it doesn't make sense if bogs don't have all of these like plants and like the
Right.
ability for plants to thrive. And then we've got like cranberry bogs and like
Yeah.
rice, I think grows in like a similar rice paddies, like grow
Yeah.
in a similar
It's
way.
just the type. Yeah. So if it's that ombrotrophic, it just can't support it, because it just prevents anything from getting out, and that means the plants don't have access to it. But there's other types of bogs that allow for this to happen. So insects will then thrive in muddy bogs, and in that environment, they'll consume the plants or fungi and pollen in that area for the bog. Many bog insects, specifically the hairy canaryfly, don't look it up, do not live in any other ecosystem. It's very specific. It was named so because it's yellow coloring, so it's like a canary bird, and is an indicator species for European bogs specifically. So if you see these flies, they only appear in those muddy bogs, so you probably got one around if you're seeing them.
Interesting.
Bog plants and insects support a wide variety of other organisms, of course. So ecologically, you got frogs, salamanders, newts. They're going to be thriving where the insects are really rich at the bogs. There's also threatened species of cranes that will nest in the bogs and peatlands in North America and Siberia. And weirdly enough, which I did not expect, raccoons are one of the largest mammals able to make their homes in
And that's so cute. Of
the
course
bog.
they can. They
Yeah,
can live
of
in a
course.
garbage can if they
Sweet little
want to.
trash pandas.
Oh my God.
But honorable mentions include moose, beaver, and river otters who will visit to feed or just to find shelter, but they're not like thriving. Okay, not like the raccoon.
The raccoon is very versatile.
Absolutely.
And they have opposable thumbs, which makes them a little creepy, but also cute.
Okay, but they also have a secret mask, and that is beautiful.
Is it a secret if you can see it? All right.
They don't know that. And then the final thing I want to talk about before we get to our not so spooky second half is, of course, kind of like we've hinted at, it the bog's impact with climate change, because unfortunately, it's just kind of a topic that's come up for obvious reasons. So peat bogs are carbon sinks. And again, remember that's because at some point in its processes, it can be used and create coal. So that's why it's carbon.
Yes.
Coal is carbon for those that
Yes.
don't know.
Burnt carbon.
Correct. And in the process, the process itself, which is the storing of this large amount of carbon, is called carbon sequestration. And this process is where carbon dioxide is captured and completely removed from the atmosphere. It is then stored in a natural or artificial facility. Plants are a major source of carbon in the environment, of course. By creating new bogs, millions of tons of carbon are sequestered or stored. The world's peat bogs sequester more than 200 billion tons of carbon, and much of this carbon is trapped in semi-frozen tundra and boreal forests in Scandinavia and Siberia specifically. Carbon dioxide, as we're very aware of, is a major greenhouse gas, and carbon emissions contribute to global warming, the current period of climate change on Earth, which is what we're experiencing. So, as the Siberian tundra is thawing, which is the problem
It
phase,
releases more carbon into the air, and
correct,
then the ozone layer gets depleted, and we all get
correct,
sunburned and die.
absolutely.
Yes.
With other gases as well. So methane is another thing that's also being released into the air.
Cows.
Right. So great. Lots of farting,
Cows.
well, cows and apparently thawing tundras.
Yes.
So smelly there. I don't know that. Don't take I didn't mean that. Just, could
We
be.
don't know how
I
it
don't
smells. We've
actually
never
know
been
how
there.
Siberia smells. I didn't mean anything by
I
that.
would say probably like nothing because it's all
Honestly,
frozen in
right.
theory.
Yeah.
So.
So carbon is also emitted as nations destroy the bogs for development and peat extraction, like we talked about. Peat ignites very quickly and burns very slowly. So peat fires can actually smolder for days without anyone kind of noticing that it's burning.
Oh.
Yes. Fires in Burns Bog, which is in British Columbia, Canada, burn underground for months, which is also insane. And in 1997, peat and forest fires in rural Indonesia released about 1,000 kilograms or over 2,200 pounds of carbon into the atmosphere. So that's a, you know, that's the other thing. You can't really, only you can prevent forest fires, but I don't know how you prevent peat fires, you know? Like, I don't know. Is
Yeah,
it
that's
just,
fair.
you know?
Unclear.
Right. So that we probably don't have a lot of influence on. But at the same time, we just, you know,
Yeah.
I don't even know how you would know.
Unclear.
Yeah. And then of course, draining the bogs for development or peat extraction destroys the ecosystem because, like most things, if you've got your cornerstone element in the ecosystem, if you take that away, it affects everything down the chain and blah 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 blah, all that
Right.
stuff. Not great is the point. So it's to the point, though, that the extensive peat extraction in England in general, at least at the time of this article, had already destroyed 75% of the entire country's bogs at that point. So it's not great.
No.
They are very delicate and fragile ecosystems, so conservation efforts mostly focus on government protection and general preservation. And today, local and national restrictions prevent agricultural or industrial development on the bogs throughout England. So that's good, at least.
Yes.
And there are, of course, restoration projects, even though they're quite rare and, you know, it's not, there's only two major types of restoration projects at the moment. The first involves the removal or partial remover of peat from the bog, while the second maintains a crust of hard peat. In both projects, water saturates the area, the sphagnum moss and other bog plants are introduced, and then chemicals are added to try and restore that acidity to create that histosol soil type.
Right.
So that is that. When we come back, we'll continue talking normally about bogs and the wonderful things They do for us. And again, certainly nothing concerning to be worried about. So I guess we'll just see you guys in the second half.
Tired of dealing with lawn work in the sweltering heat of summer? Or maybe you're not a fan of being attacked by spiders while raking the leaves in the fall. I know I'm not. No matter what lawn and garden service you need, we have a solution for you.
If you live in the Richmond, Virginia area, KT Maintenance LLC is your one-stop shop for lawn care, brush removal, and even mulch and rock delivery. Whether you need commercial or residential services, each job gets a free estimate from owner and operator, Chris Thornton.
To get your free estimate today, call Chris at 804-986-8270 or send an email his way at ktmaintllc@gmail.com and get your lawn and garden feeling fresh.
Welcome back, everybody, to the second, certainly not spooky half. I hope you enjoyed the ad. For the second half of the show, we're going to be discussing bog buddies. That's certainly not creepy or spooky or anything at all. if you don't know what a bog buddy is, you're going to find out super fast and maybe faster than you wanted to. So I will offer a little bit of maybe a little bit of a trigger if you don't like death or murdering or...
Basically,
unalive.
We're turning into a true crime podcast this time.
Yeah, it's just bog version.
please act accordingly.
Yes, and feel it's totally fine. We don't take offense if you need to go, but we will be talking about bodies, particularly dead ones, but really well-preserved ones, and we'll go into why. So first and foremost, for thousands of years, people have regarded bogs in general, apparently, as spiritual or haunted places. They're spongy, and of course that slow-burning soil has created mysteries between the Bronze and Iron Age societies, so there's a lot of mysticism there. Perhaps the most lasting testament to ancient reverence for bogs are the bog bodies. They are remains of people who died in the bogs or were placed there after their deaths. We'll get into that. Placed there.
Quote, unquote.
more than 1,000 bog bodies have been found throughout Northern Europe. Again, that is the place that has quite a few bogs. So that's why I think it's important to be mindful of statistics, but that's still a lot of bog bodies. Archaeologists and anthropologists have studied these bog bodies for clues to ancient societies, cultures, and traditions, of course, because they're well-preserved. They have discovered that most bodies, which can range from children to the elderly, did not die of natural causes. These ancient people may have murdered them, but most were probably victims of ritual sacrifices because, again, we're talking spiritual and hauntings and, you know, pleasing the gods and all of that. The low oxygen, acidic soil of bogs preserves the bodies really well because, again, there's no bacteria there. So there's nothing to eat away at the tissues or bones or those kinds of things. And so remains more than thousands of years old can completely retain their skin, internal organs, and some even still have beard stubble. I know. It's okay. I know. That's why I gave the precursor. You have to stay. You can't leave.
It's like the nature's version of formaldehyde.
Yeah.
That's disgusting.
Instead of preserving a shark, you now have a full man. There's also been recorded unique hairstyles and tattoos that were still clearly visible on the bog body.
Shout out to the tattoo artist.
I know. That ink lasted for years.
Years.
Oh, man. So how does this happen, right? Bogs begin life as those shallow lakes and ponds like we talked about, and as those plants around the ponds die, they fall into the water. However, like we also talked about, they can't fully decompose because it's stagnant there. It's a waterlogged condition, it can't escape, and it's oxygen deficient. And this creates a habitat where bacteria that would normally cause decay in organic material cannot, because it's an anaerobic atmosphere and a very acidic place to be. Crucial to the process of bog body formation, though, is that sphagnum moss. And the sphagnum acts as a sponge which will soak up all of that water and at the same time release a compound into the surrounding environment, and it binds to nitrogen and calcium, creating that acidic environment, further inhibiting that bacteria activity, like we said. And this acidity is the preservation of organic matter time frame, because eventually, you know, without this specific concoction, in normal things like swamps or even the ocean or a lake, the body would eventually decompose, which is great. The temperature is the final ingredient. The bacteria can't grow in temperatures that are below 4 degrees Celsius, and the best bog body, which is such a weird sentence, the best bog bodies are created in wintertime for obvious reasons, then, because it's below 4 degrees mm-hmm. Celsius.
Yeah.
And in fact, one of the bog bodies that we're going to talk about is the product of all of these optimal conditions put together. The story of the Tulland Man is the one that is probably most recognized. It got, from what I understand, it got the most attention on like the History Channel and like History Collection and things like that. It's the one where if you type in bog bodies, this one is 1,000% going to come up for you, which can be good or bad or scary or whatever. So
I would like to pause.
Everyone, feel free.
Please get your popcorn out now. Kirsten is going to do story time for us.
That's right. Once upon a time, in May 6th of 1950, this was in Selkeborg, Denmark. And I apologize if I butchered your town name.
I think that was right. Mm-hmm.
The local folks were already on edge, allegedly, at the time, because there were reports that a schoolboy from Copenhagen had recently gone missing. There were two brothers that lived in the town Tulland, and they were digging around for peat because that was a source of energy, of course, like we've talked mm-hmm. about.
Sure.
And they were specifically in the Silkeborg bog when they made a gruesome discovery. Dun, dun, dun. A buried body, trigger warning, with a rope around its neck showing zero signs of decomposition. This was a murder. No, I'm just kidding. It actually wasn't. That's what the article said. And then they were like, ah, just kidding. And I was like, whatever. So it wasn't actually a murder. The body wore no clothes other than a pointed, leatherized sheepskin cap that seemed not of that era. So 1950s era.
Uh-huh.
The rope was actually hand woven, so not machine made, which would also be in the 1950s era. And the face of the victim was covered in stubble. So there is your beard.
That is wild.
Yeah. And clearly not belonging to a young boy. So they realized very quickly that it was not. They thought they found the schoolboy from Copenhagen.
Right, sure.
Yeah.
But he had stubble. So like, obviously.
Obviously.
Not.
All of that, plus the news, plus the ancient history of the site, suggested that the body was from early years of the space age, was not the early years of the space age, but the latter years of the Iron Age. And again, a lot of these popped up between the Bronze and the Iron Age. Carbon dating ended up confirming this entirely, placing the man's death somewhere between 375 to 210 BC, which is crazy.
That is wild.
And the extraordinarily well-preserved state of what became known as the Tulland Man, because that's where they found him, was due to that unique chemistry of the bog. So, lack of oxygen, extremely cool temperatures, bacteria said no thanks, acidic environment, all of those things. And the fact that there were remains to unearth at all suggested that despite the noose, this man wasn't actually murdered or hanged as a criminal, because apparently during that time, if that were the case, they would have cremated the body. They wouldn't have disposed of the body.
I see.
And that's how they deciphered that instead it was probably a ritual hanging as a spiritual sacrifice.
Seems better.
I mean, yeah.
But not really.
Yeah. Some parts of the man's body did not fare as well as others, of course, though. His arms and hands were reduced to little more than a thin layer of toughened tissue covering bones, but his internal organs, such as his heart, lungs, and liver, were extremely well preserved. He is thought to have been around 40 when he died and was about 5'3", so 5'3", or 1.6 meters. The Tullamand is, of course, though, not the only one to have been uncovered in the recent decades. And like we talked about before, there's like thousands of others that have been found across the country. But I do want to at least mention one that was found in the States, because that's where we're from. Mm-hmm. And that's super fun to think about.
And of course it was found in Florida. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. It is in Florida, in fact. So in 1982 in Wendover Farm, Florida, a backhoe operator, which that's got to be a crappy day at that point when you find a body. But they were digging peat, of course, from the bottom of the pond and found some skeletons buried in the peat. The environment preserved the bones so well that the investigators from Florida State University initially believed that they were only a few hundred years old. However, after doing the radiocarbon dating, it revealed that they were between 5,000 to 8,000 years old. Kind of a bit longer. Mm-hmm. Just a little. Further excavation revealed the skeletal remains of 168 people that were, again, deliberately buried. And whoever buried them placed them on their left-hand sides, heads directed west, but facing north, which is also very specific, which again, kind of
it is specific.
Well, like it hints kind of that this was a ritual situation. That's why they were all like that.
Sure.
And each was accompanied with grave goods and wrapped in woven fabrics. They were quite unlike the lonely burials in the European bogs, and many of the skeletons showed signs of illnesses and disabilities that would have afflicted the sufferer for some years, but which they survived because somebody cared for them or, you know, what have you.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Despite being defleshed, which I hate saying,
that's a terrible word.
Awful. I didn't write it. Some soft tissue did remain in some of the bodies. In around 100 cases, brain tissue was found intact, which suggests whoever buried the bodies did so within 24 to 48 hours of death. Wow. DNA sequencing was possible and indicates the Wendover bodies were of Asian origin and had rare haplogroup. I don't know what a haplogroup is, so I apologize.
I will be looking that up now.
Please do. They were also all related, meaning Wendover Pond was actually essentially a family cemetery for these individuals, and that experts estimate was in use for over 100 years, which explains why there were so many in there. Usually bone in Florida, though, degrades quickly because of the high acid levels in the soil. But in the case of the Wendover Farm bog bodies, the bone survived because of a change in the water table itself. When the first bodies were deposited, Wendover Pond was relatively shallow with a thin layer of peat at the bottom. And well above the water table, its only water source was the rain, and the lack of peat also meant that the flesh from the interred bodies were just gradually decaying. However, with time, the water table began to rise until it was level with the pond, and at the same time, the peat layer thickened, because that's just what it does. And in European bogs, one of the effects of the acid conditions of sphagnum moss is to leach calcium from the bones, which explains why the skeletons of the European bog bodies don't always survive. But in the Wendover case, the pH of the water was neutral, which preserved the bones, but not the flesh. So,
gotcha. Yeah. So the higher or the lower the pH, the better, because it's more acidic.
Correct.
So for those curious,
yes,
a haplotype is a group of alleles in an organism that are inherited together from a single parent. Huh. And the haplogroup is a group of similar haplotypes that share a common ancestor with a single nucleotide polymorphism mutation.
Interesting. Apparently, whatever one they had was extremely rare then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. Well, that's some science.
And they were all, science, I guess you can say they were all related too.
Right, they were all related. Yeah, they were like family. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the Florida one. And of course, There are more, but we don't have time to go over all the examples. So, as I said, please go visit our links. There's so many bog bodies that are around the world. The article that I pulled was from the History Collection website, and it was extensive. So, and they also have photos. So if you're not squeamish and you want to take a look at what they look like, because it's one thing for me to sit here and explain, oh, a lot of things were intact. It's another thing to look at a perfectly preserved human body and be like, oh my God. So,
like, cryo chamber who? This is better.
Next level. So I highly recommend, if you're interested in things like this, to take a look, because it is very extensive. There's a lot of good information, and it's not just in Europe. It's not just in the States. It literally is a huge expanse. And of course, you know, you'll have a great time just looking at all the baddies. But that's all I have for bogs. And, you know.
That was great. That was lovely. And horrifying. Once again, that wraps up another horrifying episode of Mediocre Content.
It's not even October.
Feel free to send us an email with any questions, comments, concerns, or reactions to the bog bodies.
Please do.
To mediocrecontentpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram or TikTok, and you can comment there as well. Or you can catch up with us every other Thursday on Twitch. All of our handles are Mediocre Content Podcast, and Twitch happens on Thursday at 3 p.m. PST, 6 p.m. EST, or 11 p.m. BST. And don't forget to rate us 5 stars anywhere you listen to podcasts, because we're on that platform. Even if
we
it's
sure
like
are.
Amazon, even if it's on like Amazon Prime Music or whatever, we're there. So rate us 5 stars. And we'll see you next week.
Bye, guys.
This has been Mediocre Content.
Thanks so much for listening. Cheers.
Cheers.